Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes, like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. Energy has been established the world over as the unifying principle. Without energy, there can be no mind or body. From energy, the body, mind is created. The entire universe is created from spirit and will return again to pure spirit. We are the passengers on this greatest of journeys. Spirit takes many forms while in essence remaining the same. Just as water is liquid as it flows downstream, as it heats and gently rises, and solid as a rock when frozen, its appearance changes, but it remains water. The universe and the people in it can be viewed in a diversity of forms: young, old, man, short, tall, black, white, woman, graduate, laborer, animal, tree, the good, the convicted, holy, ignorant, the list goes on. Applying names to thought and form helps us grasp the vastness of creation, but it can also limit our perceptions of reality. I am a woman, therefore I am not a man, or a plant, or the sun. Yet this concept of who I am, a woman, teacher, and therapist, masks my very nature. From within myself as woman, I find man, tree, and sun. And within each of these three, I find myself. We are all the same spirit manifest in different forms. There is no separation between spirit and matter. Matter is simply a continuation of spirit. So welcome back to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space where we talk about the moments that shake us, the roles we take on, the expectations that weigh on us, and the grief that lingers beneath it all. Today, I'm sitting with Sophia Hendricks. It's so funny, I almost said my name as introducing you. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. So it's like, that makes so much sense. I think of me and I think of you. Sophia is the only person on the planet at this moment in time that's known me my entire life. Someone who, and I've watched her since we were little kids, spent her life trying to do the right thing. Being a great wife, a mother, a daughter, and sister. I watched Sophia step into one of the hardest roles of her life, caretaking for her mother, while also tending to her own family. And so when I think about what it means to hold everyone else's needs, this is the person I wanted to talk to, because this is the person I've been watching the longest, probably as much as I watched my own mom. So yeah, let's dive into it. What do you want to say to the people to introduce yourself, Sophia Hendricks?
Hi, Zoe. Thank you so much for that introduction. I appreciate it. I see myself in those ways, and it's sometimes hard to hear because, you know, but I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah. Why is it hard to hear?
Because I'm not good at listening about the good things, or mm-hmm. the good things of me, or taking compliments. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think it means to take care of other folks? What does that mean to you?
I don't think there's any other explanation, or there's no other way. It's like, if you're able, you should do. And I think I've always had a caretaker spirit. I had to help raise my youngest sister when my parents got divorced, or started that. And even before her, I had to raise my nephew when I was 12, who was calling me mommy. Oh, when I was little, and I've always babysitting, and so I think it was always just something that I did. And I think it's just a part of me.
And when you look at sort of in order to step into that role, there are parts of ourselves that we have to ignore or put to the side. What do you think, if you think about it, what you might have put to the side to live into this role?
I think I put to the side not knowing like who I am, like really the re like me, who I really am, what I really like, what I really love, because I never had time for that stuff. So I had to put those things aside to find space to be the caretaker of whatever role that was in my life. So I had to kind of let those things go. And at the time, you don't think it's a bad thing because you're so busy going through the motions of caring for others that you don't realize you're letting yourself slip. And then when you do realize it's so far gone, depending how long you're a caretaker. So,
And I think that's something that definitely as women, definitely as Black women, these are things that are put on us for sure. And there's definitely a price to pay for living outside of those norms and expectations. Do you think you picked up on that growing up, or do you think you were just so busy, like you said, you didn't even think about it? Like the price of not living up to those roles.
I didn't pick up on it until after the fact. Like after my mom passed away and my father passed away, and then I was left with all this time. I'm like, okay, what do I do now? Because I was always doing so much. And I feel like, and now my kids are grown too. So like I was doing all these things at once, all together. And then everything stopped almost at the same time too. So that's when you're like, okay, what's next? Who am I? What do I like to do? You know what I mean? Because like not just being a caretaker, but I also have survived trauma. So trauma shaped me too. So trauma shifted me from the carefree girl, because I like to look at pictures of myself as a little girl before trauma, and I see sh real joy on my face and real happiness when I smile. And so that also shaped me as well. And probably that also helped make me want to be a caretaker, because I'm also healing, like that little girl's healing someone else. And I didn't get the healing I needed, so I want to help somebody else too. I kind of think it goes hand in hand.
Definitely. So we both have had the experience of caring for moms who were challenging. What do you want to say about that?
It was difficult. At the same time of it being difficult, I also had so much grace at the same time. But it was challenging. And the challenging thing about taking care of a difficult parent is if someone doesn't experience, they don't get it. So to complain about what you're walking through, taking care of somebody that's sick, they're gonna look at you like, what is your problem? But they don't know how hard it is to try to take care of someone sometimes who doesn't want to be taken care of. You know what I mean? They're reminding you like, you're the kid, I'm the child, the parent, you're the child, no matter what's going on. So strong-willed. You know what I mean? And just like, and if it's a bad day, you're the person that is going to get the bad, that you're going to get that. And then as hard as it was, and as much as I would cry and I would want to scream, and I'm like, I'm not going to call her for 2 days or whatever, the next morning I'd be calling, because I know it's just like I felt awful for her. And then I'd be mad at myself for being mad. And I wanted so much to cultivate like a different experience that we could have together. I didn't want it to be like that. I wanted to be like what I read about and what I see on TV. And it wasn't always like that. It was a fight sometimes. And I would sometimes reach out and cry out, but I really don't think people really understood it, if they weren't walking through it. You know what I mean? They tried to, but I don't think they really got it.
And I feel like, so I just want to say, I just, one of the things I remembered was that time I called you. I had to left the house because I was so mad and I had just driven around the corner to the park because I just had to get away. But I was watching this movie this weekend about this mother who was passing. It was called The List. And she was dying, I think, of cancer. And she had left a list for her daughter because she felt like her daughter had gotten off track. So she found this list that her daughter had when she was 13 years old of all like her own bucket list, even though I hate that language, bucket list. And she was withholding the daughter's inheritance, which was the house. The daughter didn't know that at the time, but she gave everybody else in the family something except for the daughter. And the daughter had to fulfill, sorry, spoilers if y'all haven't watched this yet. But the daughter, if you have, just fast forward. But the daughter had to fulfill all these things on the list, right? And then the mother had made DVDs for every time she did something. And I was just sitting there, and this was Saturday. And for a minute, I started to get sad because I was like, oh, I wish my mother had done that for me. Like, I wish that I had had that experience. And then I was like, no, girl, this is the Hollywood experience. Was like, this is like maybe one or two people have this experience. I'm like, but this is like the Hollywood version of death. But that is like what I wanted, like that heartfelt apology or those heartfelt conversations and like something that I could just like hold on to move forward. I didn't get that. You know, I was getting cursed out right to the end. So she was not able to talk anymore. I was getting cursed out. So that I guess it's just taking people where they are, I guess. It's like,
It's true. And it's hard because I think that they see you, they're hurting. They want to do the things that they can no longer do. You're coming and going, you're living life and stuff, and they're not able to do the things they used to do. So you're the closest thing to them to be angry at because we're the ones they saw every day. So, and then, I would tell other people, go see her because she's sick of seeing me. She'll be happy to see you, so she could get like other people around and have, be happy. And I know she was grateful.
Of
And,
course.
even if she couldn't express it to me, she would tell other people.
Of
Like, she was
course.
grateful.
Of
Like,
course.
if I see people, oh my gosh, your mom talks about you all the time. But I know it was hard for her, and that's what, and I also know what her childhood was like and what, and she worked so hard and she was angry. Like, that's not the way she wanted to go. You know what I mean? She was still working at 73 and not had any ideas of retiring. She was still traveling and going on bus trips and stuff like that, very active. And that wasn't the path she wanted to be on. So I felt sorry for her for that too, because, and I had to give her grace for that, her anger. But at the same time, sometimes those episodes were just not easy.
No. And their generation didn't have the benefit of these kinds of conversations. That generation didn't have the benefit of saying, like, when I think about my own mother, you know, she caretook for both of her parents, then her brother, right? And nobody stepped in and said, "That's too much, Barbara. Put that down." They just kept putting weight on her and kept putting weight on her shoulders and kept putting weight on her shoulders. And then at the last days of her life, years of her life, nobody was around. And Both of our moms took in people. Both of our moms were extremely generous. Both of our, and so I have to imagine too, to just come to the end and the people you thought would be there weren't there.
A lot of times when she just would sit there, because I would be like, Ma, just come over so you're not sitting here by yourself all day. And she would say no sometimes. I think in the end, like, she was depressed. And I think she knew her last days were coming because I heard from a friend afterwards that she knew that she was very sick, but she never told me. But I thought she probably did sit there and think of like her life and like all the people that came and went in her life. And like there were not many people in the end that were coming and going and coming by to see her. And that did make me, I would think that there would have been more people around. And I always try to give those people grace too, because you think that maybe it was too much for them, they couldn't see her in that way, or whatever reasoning they might have. But at the same token, I think for us, how difficult was it for you and I to see our moms in that way? It was very difficult for me to see my mom every day deteriorate from the strong woman that she was into that feeble being. And she knew, I found out from someone else that she knew it was hard for me. I guess maybe she could see it, even though I didn't want to show it. But it was, she was so independent. And I knew when she was, things were getting bad is when she finally told me I could do something without a fight. And she was just letting me do things she wouldn't normally let me do. So I was like, okay. But that part was difficult. I just had a different vision of what it was going to be like. So it was hard.
Same here. I think when your parent, and listen, even our fathers were big characters, right?
So there was a time when I was a caregiver for my mom and my dad. My father ended up getting sick, and as I was caring for my mom, he called and said he asked me to jump in and take care of him too. And I was doing the both of them at the same time. The difference was is their personalities. My parents are so different. My mom was so strong-willed, and my father so zen, peace, love, and like, and so the caregiving was so different. And even though my relationship with my dad was different because of how him leaving the home, and it was fractured, and we came together later as an adult, but it still wasn't like, that same, daddy-daughter relationship. Taking care of him was easy because he was just so different, and he was just so grateful for every little thing. Nothing was a fight, nothing was a struggle. He was just happy that I was there and doing what I could. And so it was is a contrast between the two. And but I was happy to it that part became difficult juggling both of them because he had COPD and she had cancer. He had a lot of appointments, and sometimes I had to choose. And sometimes I felt bad, and that was a hard time. But we made it work.
Do you feel like you got what you needed from that reunion with your father at the end of his life?
I reunited with him like before that, but consistently for a year and a half. And I am happy that we had that. There were questions I asked him that he didn't answer, or I didn't get the answer I wanted, I should say. And like you said, it's like the Hollywood answer. I didn't get the Hollywood answer that I was expecting. It was more of whatever that I shouldn't, that I wasn't expecting. I wanted to be based on me and him, not everything else, like our relationship. But I learned a lot, and he did share some things with me, but I had to let it go. And I am grateful that we had that year and a half together. I'm sad about how it happened. Both my parents, one minute they were okay and the next day they weren't. So there were things I wish, like, I wish I had a more time because I didn't expect it to be like that. By the time, but my dad, he when he was unresponsive, he's unresponsive for like about 5 days or a week, and I know he could hear, so I would talk to him, and also my mom the same. Not that long though; she was only responsive for like for a day, but both of them very quickly fine today and not tomorrow. Like that does it, or if my mom was fine today and in the same day she was just unresponsive. There was no time to plan anything. And you think like if you know someone's sick, it's like easier, but it really isn't. Like, it doesn't make a difference if it's unexpected or because the unresponsiveness of them, like that was unexpected. I didn't expect them to go when they went. So, and I also lost a brother unexpectedly in a car accident. I feel the same grief regardless.
It's definitely, it does not. Well, I think for me, I don't know. Grief is funny, and I don't know. I'd love to hear what you have to say about this because, with my father, I had a phone call with him on a Friday. And the last words he said was, "I love you," which he like never said. And then the next morning he was dead. Attack. Right? But I was living in another state. I wasn't seeing, you know what I mean? I just feel like maybe with my mother, and I was younger. And I didn't have like 4 years in of like being with him every single day. So that feels different, but I also feel like in some ways there's some things I don't remember now, and I don't know if that's the trauma or time. So what do you think about that with sort of Robert's passing? Are there things you don't remember about that time? Because I just wonder about grief, if it does something to the memory or does it still feel like very
Oh
present?
my gosh, Robert's passing feels like yesterday. I remember everything to like where I was, what happened when I pulled up to my mom's house where everybody was standing. I remember it so vivid. It was awful. It was like we lost like my grandfather before, and he had left before his time too because of cancer, but he was older. We lost a childhood friend. But losing Robert was like, oh, I was so angry. I was so angry. But Robert knew, like he told us all along he wasn't going to live past 30 years old. And my brother, we were a little over a year apart. And but yeah, I remember the phone call I got at work from my aunt that wouldn't tell me anything, but told me just go to my mom's. And I remember my mom running out the house with Robert's things because the police had to bring his things to her so she could say if it was him or not. I remember going to the funeral home with Oliver when we had to ID the body. Like, I remember everything about it. I do.
I don't know if this will stay in the recording, but I hopped onto Catherine's live today. If it does stay on the recording, check out Druid Rising on Instagram. He came in the room
He's always there.
and she said he gave me a kiss on the forehead.
He is always there every day. And I'm mad because my Instagram is not giving me notifications anymore. And I forget while I'm at work. And then I'll look up. I'm like, oh my
Catherine?
gosh. Yeah, he's there all the time. Even at the Reiki thing I wanted to invite you to, he popped in on that.
Well, he came in, she said he kissed me on the forehead, and then I said to her, "Well, I'm interviewing." And so then she gave the rundown of like how he always shows up, how he's a part of the gang, and and our connection. And then I, said to her, yeah, I'm interviewing Sophia tonight at 6 o'clock. And she was like, oh, maybe that's why he, he rolled up. Yep. He rolled up. He gave me a kiss on the forehead and he talked about shining our light. He talked about shining our light.
I mean, he definitely was a light. If I would want to shine a light, it would definitely be on his behalf. Because he was the glue. Like, he loved to be like, the life, the party. He wanted us all to get together. So I would definitely wouldn't expect any less from him, but to say that,
So I guess maybe he wanted to be on the podcast. Welcome, welcome. We welcome you.
Yeah, but I like with your dad telling you that he loved you. It wasn't when my mom was passing, but like when she was sick one day when I went there to clean the house, because I was like going over there every day to like wash the dishes, clean, because she stopped doing that. And one day when I went there, she said, "I love you," and I was leaving. And that day I called Rachel. I was like, "I don't think my mom is going to be with us that much longer." I was like, "I got to do all the things that I can before she leaves." And I started planning all these little core memory things for her. And it's not that I didn't know she loved me. It was just that my mom didn't say I love you. She just did it in action.
Same.
Yeah, you knew you were loved. But for her to just say those words that day when I was leaving, it like took me aback. Like, I stopped in my tracks. Like, I was walking out her bedroom door. And I was like, oh my gosh, And then with my dad, he told me, I'm not afraid to go. He let me know. He goes, I'm not scared, right? Like, he let me know that he wasn't afraid. And I was like, okay. It was like different contrast, like, 'cause I feel like my mom would have fought to the end.
Same.
Like, we kept telling her, like, even one time Janae, which is my daughter, who's her granddaughter, told her, like, Grandma, like, no, mom, you don't think that's too much? Like, the last treatments that she got, and she was offended by that because she was like, don't ask me that. Like, she would have done anything they told her to do. And even I was like concerned with those last treatments, and I shared it with my siblings. I was like, I think this is too much with all the side effects and with everything else she's going on. And I kept asking, are you sure you want to do this? And she was like, yeah. And she did. So, yeah, but definitely different, ends of life there when they were, going. I think my dad, I don't know if my dad knew because COVID came out, and I don't even know if he had a chance. It was one point where he kept saying he wanted to go home, and I was like, ooh, but yeah.
Well, when my mother got her diagnosis, that first time she got the diagnosis and the doctor had asked her if she wanted to have surgery, because we didn't know it had spread. And she said, I just want to go home and be with my real family. That was the first thing that came out of her mouth. And I said, well, you don't have to have the sur like, what do you want to do? And then she was like, what do you think I should do? I was like, oh my God, don't ask me that. Like, you know what I mean? And I said, you should do what you want to do. And then she was like, well, I guess I'll have the surgery. Like, that's literally, she just was like resigned to it. But then she never had the surgery, right? And then she was gone a couple months later. But that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to go home. She wanted to be with her family. She wanted to be with her, she wanted to be with her brothers or her husband or parents. Like, yeah, she wanted to be out of here.
Yeah, you have to let them go on their own terms if that's what they want. And that's what the doctor was telling me. Like, you have to respect their wishes. With my father, I knew what he wanted. My mom, we had to pull it out of her because she was such a fighter. She didn't even want to plan as if she was going. You know what I mean? Even in the hospital, in the end, we're like, what do you want?
Mine either. Right? It's kind of like we had to figure that stuff out.
The one thing we got out of her is she wanted to be buried. She wanted a funeral, and we ran with that.
Yeah. Wow. What do you think you've learned from this?
The first thing I'd say that I learned is that you really need to prepare for whatever life brings you end of life, so that way who you leave behind, it's not that much work and guessing game for them when it comes to what you want, and they're prepared because you don't give them a lot to do that gives you give them time to actually grieve and not have to figure out a lot. Because I don't like you know it's the reality, but you got to work. Because there's things to do that weren't done, and you're running around and you're rushing around and make decisions and things like that. So I would like to take that burden off of whoever's left behind when I go. I think I learned, and I don't even know how you do that, like to share stories and try not to leave things unsaid, because I really wish there was so many more things I talked to my mom about that I really never even thought to ask her. She wasn't just my mom, and I wished I had asked all the questions. I knew like bits and pieces of her childhood and what happened to her, but I didn't know anything about like her childhood, like her teenage years and this and that, and what did you do? We didn't ask those questions. It was just so busy with life, and just living. I became a mom early, so I was just doing my thing. She's doing her thing, but I wish we just had deeper conversations about things like that. And I wish I had those conversations with my family so they don't have as many questions. I found a lot of things when she passed that made me even more. Like, gosh, because there was things I didn't even know she was feeling. I'm always looking at her like Superwoman, and she's just like me, like how I'm doing right now, like not sharing things because you don't want to bother anybody. And I never saw my mom in that light. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I knew this feeling was okay because you were feeling it too. And you didn't tell anyone because she was writing it down on paper. I don't know what else I would have learned from that experience. It's just like, I don't know. Like, if I, you never know how you're going to act when you're sick. You don't know what you're going to think about, how you're going to be. But I just hope that if I am ever in that, I vow to myself that I would be the person that I thought I would be if I was sick, and try to do the things that I know I'm supposed to do, and don't think I'm things I'm not supposed to do. But you just don't know. You know what I
We
mean?
don't
We
know.
don't know, because I always felt like I was being the bad guy by telling her, don't do this, don't do that, trying to push her to do healthier things and do the things. And at one point then I was just like, let her live. And if that's what she wants to do, let her do it. I didn't want to be a burden or whatever.
Like the doctor, I know there was one point where I just said to my mom, like, I don't want to be your doctor. I just want to be your daughter. Like,
Oh
'cause
my
I'm
God,
like, right? 'Cause I'm
that
like
part.
buying the herbs and buying the this and buying the that. And they would just sit on the kitchen table. And I would get so frustrated, and then it just kind of clicked, and it really clicked after she died, where I was like, oh, she didn't care about all those things either. She just like wanted me to love her as a daughter. Like she just wanted that love. But for me, it was like I was showing that love by like getting
Doing
the birth. And I had said to her, like, I'm trying to keep you here. Like I'd said that to her, like, I'm trying to keep you here, but I don't want to be the doctor. I just want to be the daughter.
That part, that was the hardest part, like looking back, like after everything, and I said, I was like, I felt like I got robbed of just having a mother-daughter relationship. Like, I didn't just get to lay at her feet and just come over and eat a meal and like just brush your hair. Like, I would do that, but as a job, you know what I mean? And that makes me really sad when I think of that part of it, because it was all part of do like gotta, because I had somewhere else to go after this. And there were times when I did sit and stay and just visit, and we'd hang out. And she went with me everywhere I went. But there was also times when I'm like, I had to stop there on the way to go in somewhere else, and on the way to doing this. And so it's just like I had to fit her into the day or whatever. And that would make me feel, I felt guilt. I've never felt more guilty and more selfish in that time of being a caregiver, because if I felt like I was going to try to do something, then I felt guilty or selfish because she was by herself and I should be doing that. It was just so difficult to balance all the things. But the part of just being the daughter and the mom, that I missed. That part I grieve, because we were more, I was more a caretaker than a daughter, a nurse, a doctor. I had to remember all the things, her accountant, the banker,
Listen, you already
paying the
know.
bills, your grocery shopping, you're doing, you do, you're the maid because you're gonna clean, and you're all the things. Like, yeah. So there wasn't a lot of room left for anything else. And that part's sad. Yeah.
I definitely remember like one of the last arguments that we actually had was that because she wanted me to come and like sit on the bed with her and watch TV, but I was working and I was like, I can't do everything around the house and then also kick it. You know, I just was like, I just can't do everything. And that was real, you know? So I think that, I don't know, maybe the guilt is a natural part of caregiving. And I also feel that it is on the onus of the adult to foster a different kind of relationship. I don't think that it's on us as the children to foster the mother, daughter, father, daughter, father, son relationship. I feel like that's on the adult. And, you know, those are things that I would ponder when I was sitting in my room, sitting up in my room. But yeah, and I think that that it's okay to hold those complexities that that they did their best. They did probably more than their best, and also balls were dropped.
Oh yeah.
And
And I'm always saying that no one gave that to her. So
yeah.
how did she know to give that to me or your mom to you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. So, if you were to have a message for folks out there, caregivers, what would it be before we move into a different part of the conversation?
I would say I would definitely find a support group or someone that, because trying to deal with all this, like, and live, and you have to work, you have your own home you got to juggle, your family, and everything like that. Like, you need someone that you can be able to talk to, and someone who's going to get it. That, because not everybody's going to be walking through that journey at the same time. And they might not want, and not because they're being mean, but they got their own things going on and they might not get it. And they're not your therapist and they're not, you know what I mean? So that's actually when I started therapy, actually, is when I became a caregiver, because I
Same.
was gonna lose it. I didn't know what to do. And I thought I was going absolutely crazy. And that's when I started therapy, and I had to learn boundaries because I had none. And it really helped me. There were some things I was like, okay, I can't do that. Like, it's what I felt like it was a little too rough for me to do to my mom. But yeah, but definitely have support. Yeah. And get support, find a support group. I don't know if there's like a support group for caregivers. There probably is, but I didn't know about it.
There is.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely do that.
Oh, that's a good idea. I need to start posting like some hotlines in the show notes so that that people can look for help if they need it.
And also people praying for you is like if you could have people and praying over you, praying for you, because I know that there was times all I could say was, God, please heal my mom. That was all the prayer I had in me. That's it. That was my prayer every day for a really long time. That was all I said. And I tell people, like the people I knew that were truly praying, like, your prayers carried me, because I didn't even have time to pray. And that was all I did, was pray for her. So it's good if you have like people that you know and love and trust that are praying for you.
Absolutely. And how are you now? And yeah, how are you now?
So now I'm just like in a different phase. I probably need to go back to therapy
Okay.
because I have so much free time. All my time that I had was spent with my mom. Like every waking extra minute that I had, I would run over there like to just check on her. So I didn't know what to do with all the free time I had. So I did fall into like a depression. I would just come home from work and just throw myself in the bed. I'm not doing that so much anymore as I used to, but I'm definitely still in the grieving process. Just little things. And the reason why I say that I probably do need to, because I bottle it up. I don't really talk about it that much because I don't know if anybody, well, I know you will, but you know how many other people will really get it. The loss of your mom is just something totally different. Like, no matter what the difficulties of the relationship is, you've lost someone that loves you unconditionally, no matter how difficult it is, and knew you at your best, your worst, whatever. And no matter what was going on, like I call her every single day, even if I didn't talk to anybody else, I call my mom, you know what I mean? So that is like, that just definitely shapes you and changes your world. Yeah, I definitely have some work to do. And I know that I have some work to do, but each day, it just depends on the day. Like, I never know what day it's gonna bring. I have good days and I have bad days, you know? And I don't know if people, like, 'cause people will see you and think, you know, you're having a good day and you're handling it well. So like if you're having a bad day, they're like, you know what's wrong with her? They might not understand or get it, but grief is like all the time. You just will never know when grief is gonna hit you. You know what I mean? And it's so fresh, and it can be, who knows how, you know, you're never really over it. You know, you learn to live, but yeah, I definitely have some work to do on myself. But I'm like on the path of like healing. Because I know that, you know, I'm not in denial of the work that I have to do.
Grieving, I mean, your mother, I don't even know. I mean, it's and I think for us too, and we've definitely talked about this, we were like so close with our mothers. Every day. So there's still days where I don't know what to do with myself. My whole schedule is like, it's like, what am I doing today? And
It was even simple as like, I'm going to the grocery store, you want to come just to get her out the house? You know, it was everything. Like any road trip I went on, she
Come
was
on.
there. So it's my whole schedule was juggling her appointments and my work and my, and even before she was sick, though, it
I was
wasn't
gonna
just
say,
because she was
right?
sick. Yeah.
I
It was
mean,
even before she was sick. Like she's in all the pictures. She's everywhere with us. You know, yeah. So, you know, anywhere I went and I said, Ma, you want to go? She's coming, you know? Yeah. So it wasn't just because she was sick. And that's how the relationship was fostered anyway.
And I think that's what also sets us apart too from other folks that they may not understand. Like, what do you mean you went to your mother's house every day? What do you mean you went to the rehab and
Every
stayed with
day.
her every single day? Like, no matter what. It's like, yeah, because they invested. They they put that time in. And I just think a lot of people, I shouldn't say a lot, but I've just come into contact with people where it's just like,
It's not the norm.
it's not the norm. So to be like you, and you know, like, oh, we're gonna go upstate. Oh, do you mind if my mom comes? We're going to Martha's Vineyard. Do you mind if my mom comes? Like, who's carting around their 70 and 80 year old parents on girls trips, right?
But she came.
And family trips. But maybe, and that's just how we were raised too, right? Like everybody was involved. So maybe that's like being 70s, 80s, growing, being that generation where everybody was involved. Everybody's piling in the car. Everybody's going everywhere together.
And culturally too,
Yeah, I think
like
culturally for sure.
that's what we saw. Like if nobody's told no, like they can't stay. There's always a place to stay. Like they told
Everybody's
nobody
free.
no.
Yeah, everybody's going out to dinner. Nobody's going home because now we're going out to dinner as a family. No, bring them too. So.
And my mom really wanted to cultivate family. She loves having people around her.
Yeah, mine too.
So many, not just her own kids, the her chosen children and grandchildren, and just like, so that's who she, she was,
Yeah. And now you're doing that. Your grandchildren. Right? Everybody else's children coming and kicking it.
But yeah, she was special, definitely one of a kind in that way.
Definitely. So if you thought about something that you might want to reclaim at this point in your life, what do you think you want to reclaim?
If I want to reclaim something in my life, honestly, if I could go back to my 12 years old, I would want to reclaim that part of my life, so and see what my life would have been like if, I always think about that. Like, who would I be? You know what I mean? How would my life have shaped out differently? I would like to reclaim that power, that part of me that was taken from me, So I think about that. That's something I definitely need to work on and heal.
I know somebody. You know how they say, I know a guy, I know a girl. I know somebody. I had an amazing soul retrieval on the equinox. Amy Miranda, shout out to Amy Miranda. She did a soul retrieval with me, and my 7-year-old self showed up and came back. My 13-year-old self came back, and my 22-year-old self came back. And the thing about this ritual, for anybody listening, is so parts of ourself depart when we go through trauma. And she said my 7-year-old just like didn't want to just she, I just really didn't want to be like involved in like school and stuff like that. So I kind of just like, or I guess kindergarten or whatever was happening. So I just like ducked out. I just like she said I might have just gone and just crawled out the window one day, and that because these parts of ourselves just kind of split off and go and just like hang out around us until we're ready to reclaim them. So, my 13-year-old self, she said there was a lot of sadness, which makes sense because of things that were happening at that time. And so, and then my 22-year-old self, you already know what was going on when I was 20. So what she does is she takes you through this ceremony with music, with the drum, with song. I went to sleep. She just started banging that drum and she started singing. And the next thing you know, she was like, Zoe, wake up. Two, it was like 2 hours. And so she goes and she, I guess, meets these other versions of yourself and then she invites them back. And then they come back with the gifts.
Nice.
So I was like, oh, so, and then she invites them to come back into your, into my body, into this, like, I'm banging my body, people. And she said the process takes like 6 months to a year for full integration, but I already feel the vitality coming back. I started this podcast a week later. So I highly recommend soul retrieval because I've never had that. And I've done a lot of stuff, but that I haven't done. And yeah, I feel different. Yeah. And the and she said like the 7-year-old like is very active. The 7-year-old like runs the show and she just wants to play. Because again, that's one of the things that gets stripped from us with trauma, right? It's like that play,
Yeah, that's gone.
that essence of who we were. Yeah. It's not gone. It's just like hanging out. Yeah. So little Sophia is like hanging out somewhere waiting for you to call her back.
Yeah, I had a similar, not that, but one of the therapists that I went to would always have me, like my people, like sit next to me, like the people that had to curate to survive through trauma, whatever, and and how those people help shape me get to here, and how you have to invite them back in. And not it's not a bad thing because they help carry you know, to where you are today. But yeah, it's a little sort of different, but
Well, I'm excited to see 12-year-old you. I feel like we got some of it at Alvin Ailey.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we did.
We got a little taste in ballet class. But I'm excited for that. Is there anything else that you want to say as we come to a close? Anything you want to leave the people with?
I just want to just, acknowledge anybody that is a caretaker and recognize the realness and the hardness of it, and to know that you're not alone. And we recognize what a job and a work it is, and that you are your parents or whoever you're taking care of, even if they can't express it, they appreciate it, and don't give up. Reach out to someone if you're struggling. But you're a blessing to those around you that you're helping, and it's a blessing to you too. Like there's good in the bad,
That's
and
right.
like
That's
because
right.
even in there's days where it was really good to be there, and we had good days and good laughs and all that. So I wouldn't trade any of that for anything. But
Absolutely.
don't
Yeah.
give up.
It's an honor. It's
Yeah, it
truly an
is
honor.
truly, truly.
Ah, this was good. We did it.
Yeah, we did.
Minimal tears.
Yeah, we did.
Did it with minimal tears.
Yeah.
Yay. I'm so excited. And I just know that this is gonna give the folks what they want. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you to you, Sophia Hendricks, for your existence, for your energy, for being who you are. And next time on Come to the Brink, we're gonna dive into a different kind of grief. We're going to dive into the grief of holding multiple identities in one body. We're going to be looking at what happens when the identities we carry are in conflict, when we come from histories of colonization, racism, and attempted erasure. Right? When the world tells us to choose one version of ourselves, how do we deal with that? How do we honor all parts of who we are, even when those parts feel like they're literally at war? So we're going to be talking about that next week. So make sure that you're subscribed. We're now every week. And yeah, meet us here because nobody deserves to be on the brink alone. I'm Zoe Flowers, and I'll see you next time. Bye.